Good morning, everyone. It's time for our AM Minnesota program. I've got the legendary president and CEO of the Faribault Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism, Norm Johnson, with me. Are those new glasses?
You know, these are actually borrowed. As you can tell, they're a little bit feminine.
They're kind of funky,
Nature. Borrowed those from Cassie at the office a couple of weeks ago.
No kidding.
Still haven't found my my spare sets. So,
are these readers?
They're readers.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I had the LASIK done a few years ago, and boy, that's just a dream.
I know. I had it done back in 2004, I think it was.
Yeah. Yep. It was real treat to wake up at night and be able to see where I was going, needed to keep the readers.
Richie told me I'll never read readers because I got a farsighted eye and a nearsighted eye.
Oh, I know a couple people that have done those.
Mine was naturally that way.
Oh, wow. Do you have to close one eye then while you're reading?
No.
And
he said that gives people headaches when we do those adjustments, but you've been doing it your whole life, so your body's used to it.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, the body's an amazing thing, the adjustments that it will make for you.
Here I'm blessed. I complain because of my bald head, but the good Lord gave me two good eyes.
There you go. Yeah, the bald head. I've been suffering with, not suffering, I've been...
I honestly don't mind
I've
it.
I've been living with it for... I started at 19 years old, mine started receding pretty...
No kidding.
Pretty briskly, yeah.
19.
Yeah.
I had a friend in high school who was practically bald when we graduated.
Oh, wow. It happens. You know, the whole grass doesn't grow on a busy street kind of thing. There's all kinds of little jokes about that.
Well, yeah, there's some we can't tell on the air, too, as far as that goes.
There's that.
So what's been happening at the Chamber? It's the end of the year.
It has been a year for the Chamber and for Faribault. We've made some tremendous progress on some of our visionary priorities. We started working on those 2018. And actually this weekend...
That's 8 years ago. 7 years ago. Next year.
So this weekend highlights the first little project that we got involved with in trying to move that Vision 2040 forward, Gordy. And it was... And that's a meaningful winter festival, right? And our board chair, board member at the time, Nate Chappie, just down the street here at the jewelry store, he and I were discussing what was an evolving visionary agenda for the chamber. In other words, the board made some decisions that we should take some responsibility as the business organization in Faribault for moving some things forward that were outlined as citizen and business priorities for Faribault. And one of the things that looked like we could check it off pretty quickly was overwhelmingly people in Faribault wanted to have a little bit more with the Winter Festival. And the hometown holidays has been great. City's been doing that for a long time. But how could we expand that? And in my time in the Black Hills, I became pretty fond of the lighted parades. And every community had one out there. And my organization, the Black Hills Badlands Association, we had one of those four-door Jeep Unlimiteds with a vinyl wrap on it with Mount Rushmore and everything, and a trailer that we drug around that had what had a buffalo on it, and had Devil's Tower and Custer State Park and motorcycle for the Sturgis Rally, that all lit up. And we would go around to all of these Black Hills communities. They each had a lighted parade. Spearfish, Sturgis, Rapid, Hill City, Custer, Deadwood. Everybody had those, and they were fabulous. The locals loved them. And some of the, I'll call them the Black Hills institutions, Black Hills Energy, the Black Hills Badlands Tourism, and a few others, they had a float that went to every community for their parades, and people absolutely loved it. So Nate and I decided that we were going to do what it took to have the chamber get a lighted parade, get it permitted and promote it. And that first year told the story that it was the way to go. And so we're pretty excited. I think this will be the 8th one this year. So,
and your cohort told me last time he was on the air They pinged like 10,000 phones downtown a year ago.
Yeah. Yes.
That's incredible.
It's pretty amazing. It's so packed when... I think 10,000 is a little high on the number, but it is in the thousands for sure, and it's north of 5,000. I've got some photos from driving the parade last year. It got a little scary, the number of people that were there, you know, kind of crowded out and pushing
into the parade route. Which is why they're not allowing parking this year.
Yep, this year we just, from a safety perspective, we had some community members, and I agree with them completely, just really insisted that we do everything we can from a safety perspective, because I couldn't imagine if we had an accident with the pedestrian.
Chief Sherwin actually on this show said that he had suggested that we do that in downtown Faribault. So there will be, I just want to remind people, this Saturday is Winterfest in Faribault.
It is. It starts Thursday
with
the hometown holidays, and there's wagon rides downtown, and Friday night's the tree lighting ceremony at the new park. Saturday, we will have the lighted parade, and then we land down at the new park is where the event is this year. We move the band around so that the different establishments can have some, they get a few extra customers, you know, they come in and warm up and grab a cocktail or whatever. This year, we're going to have it down by a Crooked Pint in the new park. So we're also having the fireworks at the end of the parade and running the parade the opposite direction. So it made sense to us that let's do the fireworks at the end, because what happens when you have it ahead of time, people are moving down, you know, down a block, down the hill to the east so they can see the fireworks better. And then they're running back up the hill to find their spots for the parade. Well, we're running the parade the other direction. So we're going to start at the north end here, go down Central, and then the floats will disperse when they get down to Division Street.
Are you going to shoot the fireworks from Tipi Tonka?
Nope, not this year. We're doing the smaller safety shells again, and we're doing them right from the new Viaduct Park.
Oh, okay.
And there'll be a perimeter fence set up, but you're going to be able to be right there. It's going to be fabulous. So we're talking about perhaps next year going with the bigger shells, basically, and shooting them from Tipi Tonka. That's got a pretty good landing zone there, as you know. So what a blessing to be able to talk about doing these kind of things, about improving them, I should say. Hey, we're not doing them anymore. Now we're taking them to the next level.
Yeah, Viaduct Park. Now, I understand you're going to have a tent again for the band when you've got the building there.
We'll have too many people for just the building, I think.
Seriously?
Yeah, we got a pretty good crowd for this thing.
That building's pretty good size.
And it's Winterfest. It is. I don't disagree. Maybe in the future we'll slide into that space.
I love that fire pit, by the way.
Very cool. They did a great job with that part. And I think it's going to continue to improve. I think about what's happening in the district, in our historic, beloved downtown, and a couple of things happening right now that are just fabulous boosts. Yesterday, we had the groundbreaking for the new corporate headquarters for KGP.
Okay, all right.
You know, kitty corner from the Fairway parking lot, right? And that where, you know, Jerry Hoisington did his research yesterday when he was talking about, everybody took a little microphone time of entities that were involved with helping out. And my few moments were simply appreciation for all of the hard work, dedication by all parties involved. I'm talking city, county. The Industrial Corp had a role, a minor role in making connections and being involved in promoting it.
Was the state involved in this at all?
I'm sorry?
The state? Were they involved at all?
There are some state pieces involved with it as well. Those need to be accessed through the EDA, which Dave Wanberg and his crew did a great job with that. Our city admin, Jessica Kinzer, I want to say new, but she's been here a while now.
She has.
And is, I think, doing a great job also. But the entities that came together to ensure those things happen, and there are certainly some awkward decisions that are being made based on some public discussion around subsidies for these kind of things. And I get it. I don't discount the value of anybody wondering why we're spending, how we're spending, et cetera. That's America. We get to question and we get to examine how government is functioning here, right? But at the end of the day, you're faced with decisions of what are the repercussions if we don't help incentivize? Because if we don't, another community will. And I can tell you from experience and from studies that it is a lot more difficult, a lot more expensive, and a lot more time consuming to recruit a business to put such a headquarters. But retention, in other words, keeping what we have, and expansion, expanding what we have, that's really where it's at. That's where the bargain is. And while some of these activities still amount to subsidies in the forms of tax abatements, et cetera, it is the way business is done. And if Faribault wants to be competitive, we want to keep the nice things we have, and we want to grow and have more nice things, we do need to conduct ourselves as though we're competing with other communities, because in fact we are.
Yeah, no question about it.
But super proud. So we've got this corporate headquarters coming downtown on one end, a fabulous new splash pad park, and it'll be a skating rink at a point as well on the other corner of downtown. This is a real boost. Real boost.
For sure. We got to take a break here, get our opening market report. Here's the Linder Market Report and Analysis.
Good morning. It's time for the market update on this Wednesday here on the Linder Farm Network. And joining us, Jim Emter, Van On & Company, Alexandria. Well, Jim, a little lower for corn and beans. What's weighing on those markets on this Wednesday?
Well, let's start for the corn and wheat markets. First off, kind of just a little bit of calmness prevails. President Putin yesterday threatened that he's ready for war, basically directed it more at the EU and says, if Ukraine continues to attack any of their ships, they'll retaliate to anybody supporting Ukraine in the war. And so that got the corn and wheat market revved up yesterday. Well, as the calmer heads prevail, we kind of seek both the corn and wheat market, maybe to a lesser degree, but corn kind of giving back some of this premium. We know we've got a lot of corn in the countryside, Linda. When we get up near these highs, we're going to see farmers selling, and that's going to be one of the limiting factors. And I think that's a component of what you've seen here. I think everybody's kind of waiting on pins and needles over Rollins to see what she says about farm payments and what comes out. Supposedly, sometime this week or next week, we're going to hear finally what the details are, but it sounds like they're still working on them. Over in the soybean complex, a very important trade today. We dip below that 1130 mark. That's basically your neckline measurement here for this potential head and shoulders formation. And if we start to take out 1130, 1129, you open up a can of worms that could take us down into the 1060 to 1080 area. So when you're talking a 50 to 70 cent type correction, Linda, we got to be attentive to that, particularly in the soybeans. And if we announce that and don't get China to show up here, this is the third day we haven't seen private sales, and that leaves the market disappointed, because again, we've got to buy nearly 2.5 million metric tons of beans a week, meaning China needs to buy in order to meet USDA's, the government's requirement by Jan 1, so the 12 million metric ton goal. So we've got some things to monitor here. Beans, very important close today, and if we get below that 1130, that's not looking promising on the charts here.
And meanwhile, a little calmer look, a quieter look to livestock trade. What are you following?
You know, Linda, we'll take a little calmness, because, again, if we're not $4 to $7 down, we're $4 to $7 up. And so today we're kind of unchanged here as the market surges a little bit. Cutouts fell pretty significantly yesterday. Choice, we're down 417. Selects down 710. So again, with that significant, move lower, I'm impressed the board's holding in here today against some of the resistance areas we are in. So we'll keep an eye on the cash undertones. They're the supporting factor, 215 to 223. A live base stress, 340 to 343. That encompassed a lot of last week's trade, and we'll see if that can carry through here again this week. Otherwise,
That's Jim Emterf and On & Company, Alexandria, and Chicago March Corn, 444 and a half, down 5 and a half. July 457 and a half, down 5. January beans 1121, down 3 and 3 quarters. March beans 1130 and 3 quarters, down 4 and a quarter. March Chicago wheat down 1 and a quarter. March Minneapolis down 0.75 cents. February live cattle 221.05, up 25. March feeder cattle up 65. January up 42. February lean hogs up 35. April up 25. This is a Linder Farm Network.
Sweetwater Ag was founded on a simple idea. Farmers deserve better. Created by Josh Hook and Wyatt Johansson, we're a family-owned independent supplier of branded and generic chemicals committed to fairness, transparency, and service. We know farming because we live it every day, and that perspective drives how we serve you. At Sweetwater Ag, it's farmers helping farmers with honest business and strong relationships. Sign up for our monthly price sheet and newsletter today at sweetwaterag.com or call 507-829-6469. Sweetwater
Wingert Ag. Land Services has several auctions coming up. On December 5th, a 155-plus acre farm in Aurora Township, Steele County. On December 17th, 150.83-plus in Sterling Township, Blue Earth County. Upcoming January auctions include 160-plus in Redwood County, 274-plus in Freeborn County, and 150-plus farm in Faribault County. For more information, go to WingertLandServices.com. And that's our update.
Well, we certainly do appreciate that update. I'm sure you appreciate that update. We always love updating our updates.
AM Minnesota on the Mighty 920 KDHL.
Started talking about Jerry Hoisington, and of course people that know me, I do get off track once in a while.
No, that's okay. I do it all the time. That's why people don't like listening. No, I'm just kidding.
So during Jerry's little statements on behalf of the county, he outlined that, and I think it was 165 years ago, that on that same corner where the shovels were going in the ground for this corporate headquarters for a Faribault born and grown business, KGP, the Faribault Woolen Mill built on
their
that
headquarters
site.
Were there, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
The mill, of course, is on the river. So yep. I always wondered, why did they put the building downtown?
I think that they weren't necessarily using the river for power then.
Oh, okay. All right.
So the river became a great way to, you know, power up the plant.
Sure.
And I think that as they grew, that became a, if you're a good business person, you're going to look at what your overheads are, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, if they set up down there, perhaps the land was a little, certainly not developed, not overdeveloped, and so available and strategic, I would suppose, from a few perspectives. So they ended up down there, and of course, after a short break of being shut down, they're back to a very very busy and growing business.
It was a sad day when they shut down.
Yeah. Well, you know, the renaissance that took place brought in some fresh ideas, and during that time of the shutdown, the economy, of course, was really bad.
Yeah.
And
the
new ownership group, you know, they hit the reset button and got things going again and brought in some just really wonderful advisors and investors.
Well, better marketing in terms of the internet and everything, right?
Oh, yes. And they've expanded and modified the product line to ensure that they could leverage what is their brand, the heritage brand of the Faribault Mill, into products that they didn't previously offer. So they've been able to expand their market presence and therefore their revenues. And they even a little bit of a change in the substrates that they used to manufacture. They bought the cotton mill, I think it was in Maine. So they're doing, you know, high-end products there as well. So
smart wool.
Upgraded their technology so that they could manage. Coming from the printing industry, I describe it as short run, right? You're not doing volumes and volumes and volumes, which typically with old technology, in order to pay down setup charges, getting a certain pattern to set up and run. You needed to, it took a while. It was expensive. And so then once you got that going, you'd want to make as many of those as possible sure. to spread out the cost of the setup. They basically have modernized their in printing. It's pre-press. We'll just say it's pre-loom, the process of getting something ready there. But they've digitized that process and are able to do some really super cool high-end production mapped blankets and things like that. I'm sure you've seen those in different patterns. They can do in shorter runs, custom runs for corporate gifting or NFL teams or whoever it might be. So they don't have to do thousands and thousands and thousands in order to buy down the cost of getting something set up.
They're Meanwhile, able to do they going. Still have the Defense Department contract to provide blankets for all Army
yep.
folks?
Yes, sir.
Because my dad, in his World War II chest in the garage when I was a kid,
okay.
had a wool blanket, and it came from the Faribault Woolen Mill.
Well, Dave, keeping Faribault, keeping our troops warm for over a century, thinking about it in those terms.
It just started just after the Civil War, right? Right at the end of the Civil
yep.
War?
Yep. So I've been blessed beyond measure my whole life, but a couple of the blessings I had was to bring Faribault Woolen Mill products overseas to Europe. And one of my favorite was Podensac, France. So as you know, our Faribault Battalion from the Faribault Armory kept the village and surrounding area of Podensac, France safe at the end of World War One. Well, World War One. So that was 1918, okay? And those troops had mill blankets. Well, we were invited to celebrate that 100-year anniversary of the Armistice Day, and we brought with us blankets, the American flag blankets from the Faribault Mill, and gifted them. And I was blessed to be able to tell the story to this sizable group in Podensac. It says, so there's something special about these blankets, one for the mayor and one to hang in City Hall along with the proclamation that it's Podensac Day in Faribault that day. I was able to share with them that this came from the same facility, some of the same equipment that made the blankets that kept our troops warm in the trenches while they were protecting you 100 years ago.
Are they a sister city?
Not an official sister city.
We should make them
twinning, they call that.
An official sister city.
We've been working on that. The relationship remains. But then we're able to gift some specially loomed blankets or short run blankets with our sister city, Würzburg, Germany, a few right. years later. So the story there for Würzburg, of course, is Commander Beebe, who was in charge of the Allied reconstruction forces that were there. His wife was from Faribault, recognized a massive need for supplies, especially for the children. When the Allied forces put an end to the Nazi regime there.
And they dropped them from planes, right?
They dropped what they did at the end of the war is they pretty well needed to wipe out Würzburg. It was just a disaster. I don't think there was a single roof there that didn't have major damage or was destroyed. Well, Commander Beebe's wife understood what was going on there. And being a Faribault kid, knowing that they needed help, she made the call back to Faribault, yeah. said, hey, friends, we've got a lot of kids here that are in huge need. Please help out. Well, we brought woolen mill blankets there, describing to them Faribault was a town of immigrants. And a German family, the Klemmer family, started the Faribault Mill in Faribault. And that's where these blankets came from. So as gifts to our sister city from there. So it's quite a hallmark Faribault business. Now, KGP is worldwide now. I mean, they merged with the company from Paris, France. And that's pretty cool to have them keep the KGP headquarters right here in Faribault with the... and that will be a growing business. I mean, they're gonna be keeping at it. So, pretty cool stuff.
Again, Winterfest, what are the hours for Winterfest?
The hours for Winterfest. So, well, Thursday from...
5 to 8?
Well, it's actually 3 day. It will start the carving and an open house at South Central College. So wander out there early to South Central College. And then at 5 o'clock, Cicada Carvers is going to start the ice carving at Buckham Center. You can watch that happen in person. The carriage rides also start at 5 o'clock, 5 to 7, and they start at Buckham Center as well. And then the hometown holidays celebration with Santa and Mrs. Santa and the bounce house, some sing-alongs, some crafts, etc. That's Thursday night. Friday, 5:30 to 7 o'clock, meet the Grinch at Viaduct Park. Carriage rides at night as well. And then the tree lighting, 5:30 to 7 at, again, the new Viaduct Park. Now, the window decorating contest, that started. So you can vote online and you can get ballots. You get your ballots and turn them in at Buckham Library, and we'll announce the winner Saturday night at the street dance. Again, Saturday starts at 10 a.m. with the Christmas market at the American Legion, Craft Spirits Holiday Bazaar at 10,000 Drops. That's from 11 o'clock to 4. Ugly Sweater Run, that's new this year. Tanya Dunn is running that for us. That starts at 4:30. The Ugly Sweater Run, run and walk, so you don't have to actually run. The person with the ugliest sweater will win a basket of goodies. And then proceeds from that event go toward Viaduct Park. The Parade of Lights starts at 5:30. And again, that starts, right here on this corner. I'm looking at the corner out the window of your studios here, Gordy, and goes north to south. They'll disperse just before they get to Buckham Center. And then we ask the crowd to move down the block toward Viaduct Park to watch the fireworks.
So is the lineup at Central Park?
Lineup will be the blocks continuing back toward Central Park from here, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Sponsors will be up front. They are helping pay for things, fireworks, et cetera, so they get to go first. And then the fireworks after the parade. So that's going to be fantastic.
Grand March with the parade, by the way, will be on this show Friday.
Heidi Ernst. Yep. We were... one of the treats is that when the committee decides who is going to be our grand marshal, is we give them a call from my office. We get them on speakerphone, and we're able to inform them. So that's just been a whole lot of fun. And we appreciate when you were grand marshal, Gordy.
Well, I don't remember it being on a speakerphone. I think you divulged it on the air here.
Actually, yes. Well, this was special circumstances. I don't get everybody on the air.
That was the second one. Yeah.
And then the street dance goes till 10. And we've got the Snow Go Club will be down there selling 50-50 raffles. And they're going to have Santa with the snow groomer down there at after the parade as well. So
it was not as big a deal back then. It's become pretty huge now.
Yes, it has.
And you were mentioning about South Dakota and all the lighted parades.
Yeah.
The first lighted parade I remember around here was in Montgomery.
Montgomery, yes.
Minnesota. And, of course, now we've got one. Kenyon is having one next weekend.
Fabulous.
Cannon Falls has had one for a number of years.
But there, it's, you know, when you see the number of people that come out and the variety of the businesses and families and organizations that put floats in, it's glorious. It just really is. It's community coming together.
Yeah, it's Minnesotans celebrating in winter when some people think, how can you do that? It's winter. It's cold.
Well,
it was in the 40s when I was Grand Marshal on the parade.
Yes, it was. We had one of a couple of nice parades. We did have to postpone. We ended up canceling one because it was it was too wintry for Winterfest that year. But, hey, Gordy. So this is a little bit of the year-end show as well. I know we've got just like a minute and a half here left, but I want to thank you on behalf of the chamber and the business community for your presence in Faribault and what you cover and what you do from the airwaves here. It's been important for a long time, and we all appreciate you, Gordy.
Well, I appreciate that.
And we appreciate your organization. So thank you very much.
No problem. It's my pleasure. I've enjoyed it all these years. And there aren't a whole lot of them left, so
Well,
retirement is just around the corner, and I'm going to enjoy it, believe
me. Well, we'll not let you retire fully.
I was just talking to someone this morning about when I retire, I'm not going to spend my whole winter here. I'm going somewhere warm.
Well, find a little bit of warmth, then come back.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, all right.
Bunch.
Thanks, Nort. Appreciate it. I don't know who we're going to have on tomorrow, but I do know that Heidi will be with us on Friday. Hope you can all tune in for that. Have a great day.